Hey, Coach. Welcome to the Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Oliver. Let's share the game.
Hey, Coach. I'm excited to announce a brand new way to access our resources to elevate your coaching monthly memberships. At Basketball Immersion, we know every coach's journey is unique, just like your player's skill sets. That's why we're dedicated to providing you with the flexibility you crave. Our new monthly access plan lets you get full access to all our videos and courses on a month-to-month basis, giving you the freedom to cancel or renew as needed. Whether you're just starting out or looking to add some fresh perspectives to your existing coaching repertoire, Basketball Immersion has the resources to help you reach your goals. Head over to basketballimmersion.com to take control of your coaching journey and unlock your full potential with Basketball Immersion.
Welcome analytics experts from Hoopsalytics, Bill Dettering and Mike Murphy, to the Basketball Podcast. Bill Dettering developed and conceived Hoopsalytics with co-founder Mike Murphy. Hoopsalytics brings the most powerful analytics to teams of all levels. It is a next-generation basketball stats and analytics system designed by coaches for coaches. Bill Dettering is currently the girls' varsity coach at Truckee High School and is in his 12th season as a basketball coach at various levels. He played college basketball at Swarthmore College. He is a lifelong software designer and entrepreneur, previously founding ZingTree, and has started and run six companies, all powered by data-driven decision-making. Mike Murphy is the current head coach of the freshman-sophomore basketball team at Urban High School in San Francisco. He played college basketball at UNC Greensboro and Catholic University. Bill and Mike met as they played together in a San Francisco area men's league that led to them connecting and building Hoopsalytics together. Bill and Mike, welcome to the Basketball Podcast.
Bill, thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Great to be here.
It'll be fun to talk. And Hoopsalytics has been part of the Basketball Podcast for a while now. So it just adds a lot more depth to what it is and such a great thing. And as I said, any great business solves a problem. And one of the things that I see is that you've created a really affordable thing for coaches, especially at some of the lower levels where budget constraints. I was a small college coach. I know that. And made it accessible in a really effective way for those coaches. Can you talk a little bit about that goal?
Yeah, I mean, it's taking the Moneyball concept and applying it to basketball. Basketball is really data rich, right? I mean, every game that we score, there's between 500 and 700 events, and there's so much information in there that people aren't tapping into. And especially for some of the small coaches that may or may not even have an assistant, right? It's another way to look at what happens in your games. And it's like having an unbiased assistant coach kind of tapping on the shoulder and saying, hey, look at this, look at that, right? Some things also need the eye test. You may see a kid that's struggling shooting from the corner, for example. And is it because they haven't practiced it? Is it because the passes are off target or off time? And so it's, and everything we do is video linked, right? So you can see the analytics of this, but you can also see, you know, go back and look at the video and do the eye test and figure out why these numbers are the way they are. Sometimes it's random chance. Oftentimes there's something that's correctable. So yeah, that's the goal behind the whole thing.
So you mentioned this, it's like having an unbiased assistant coach to show you more closely what you look at. And going even deeper than that, obviously, you can use it to your level of comfort as a coach as well. Is that a big part of this, Mike?
Yeah, for sure. I think that the ability to track and easily use the platform is a big asset for Hoopsalytics. For example, last year we had a kid who was our starting center who was just a stallion, could just run from baseline to baseline all game long. So we started tracking his rim runs, and we could show the kids in a file his 10 rim runs from the previous game, what we did right, what we did wrong, and also our scoring efficiency off of those things. It's not just me yelling in practice, move the ball up the sideline, get the ball to the rim. It's me yelling, we're scoring 1.65 points per every rim run. That's way better than our normal average. Let's keep doing that. So the guys can understand it. And these kids nowadays, you mentioned it earlier before we started recording, that a lot of NBA announcers and college announcers are familiarizing their audience with technical terms that we never used to talk about. And it was pistol actions, Spain action, just simple stuff like DHOs and double drags. And these kids are all fluent in this kind of stuff now. So when we use it in practice, it really resonates with them. Being able to track and customize the things that are especially particular to you as a coach is a really big selling point and asset of Hoopsalytics.
It's such a great point. I feel like the analytics movement in particular has elevated the collective intelligence of fans, coaches, players, across the board, and we can all speak a language that is a lot more specific than the generalities we used to use. And that's a great stuff. And Bill, I know one of the motivations behind this was particularly when you looked at defensive stats. So I want you to talk about that a little bit, and particularly what are the statistical indicators that you prioritize when evaluating defensive performance?
Yeah, defense is really hard to measure because you basically have steals, deflections, rebounds, and that's basically it. And that doesn't really tell the whole story. So one of the stats that we, or more like an analytic that we do with Hoopsalytics, is a defensive points per possession. So it basically measures how well the other team scores when a particular player is on the floor. So the player might be really good at boxing out or closing out or rotating in defense or whatever. And that stuff is really hard to measure statistically, but you can see when a particular player is on the floor, especially after 6, 7, 8 games, how often the other team scores. And it's really a nice way of measuring what the intangibles are as far as how effective a particular player is upon impacting the whole team's defense. And of course, the same goes for offense too, right? There's a lot of intangibles in offense that aren't always encapsulated by how many assists and points you score and that sort of thing.
I love it. And particularly, I guess, with defensive strategies and rotations and who's playing with what group and matchup analytics, et cetera. How does this really drive those decisions that you can make as a coach?
You can, again, you can look at the defensive points per possession when a particular player is on the floor. We have something called a player impact report. And again, it shows the team stats and how a particular player affects those stats. Likewise, rebounding percentage, right? There's a like the individual rebounding percentage. We know what percent of available rebounds a particular player gets, but also on the team side, they might have a player that boxes out really well, doesn't necessarily get a lot of rebounds, but again, enables other players to get rebounds. And likewise, you can also segment it in groups of two or groups of three or lineups. So you can say, for example, which pair of players are most effective on defense. Sometimes two players will complement each other. So that's another way of slicing and dicing the data and getting more actionable information out of the game stats that we compile for you.
And then defensively, you can also label what type of defense you like to play. So we would play full court man. We would fall back into our 1-1-3 matchup zone. Sometimes we play half court man. So we would label all that. And then we can track what our points against were for each of those defenses. And what Bill was mentioning earlier, that gives you an unbiased view of how your sets are actually performing.
Yeah, and to take that further, too, you can say, okay, when we played the zone and this particular player was on the floor, how did it do versus when another player was on the floor? Or maybe when a particular player is not on the floor. So you can see their impact, both their presence and their absence, and how it affects different schemes that you're doing.
I was going to bring that up because one of the things that's, I think, pretty cool about it is instead of evaluating 5-player lineups, you can break it down into 2 or 3-player type of groups to be able to see more specifically how certain groups of players rather than just all 5 play together, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And with those 2 groups or 3 groups of players, you can get reliable plus minus figures and net PPP, and that'll drive some of your coaching decisions for sure.
And is that more important than looking at 5-player lineups?
It's another way of looking at it. Not always 5-player lineups are helpful, but sometimes there's groups of 2 or groups of 3 that have an outsized impact, irregardless of who the other 2 or 3 players are. So I think it's important to look at both.
So both of you are coaching high school right now, different ages, right? But in terms of that, what is the barrier to entry for a coach to be able to get this information to their players? Is there a certain education process, or what is the process that a coach should go through to be able to help their players apply this information?
I guess the first challenge for most coaches is just getting good game film. You know, some of them, you know, are really good at this, some kind of struggle. But if you have, you know, an iPad or anything like that, or some of these gyms have, you know, motion tracking cameras, it depends. But just being able to get a good film where our scorekeepers can read the jersey numbers is important. It's not that hard. You just have to dedicate the time and effort to do that. And Mike, would you embellish on that at all?
Oh, for sure. We were at a game last night, Coach Bill and I, and Bill had his iPad out, and it's like almost being at a tennis match, right? You just got to follow the action, and we can't be having a conversation, and then the action goes to the other side of the floor, and then you miss it. So that's the most important thing, is having a really good defer. It's not that hard, but it does take discipline to follow all the action. And after that, really, it's not too tough. Loading the games is pretty simple. Bill's the tech genius behind Hoopsalytics, and I'm just a regular Joe. We work well together because he has to figure out a way to that I could use it. And if I could use it, then everybody can use it. It's not too tough. Once you get your game loaded, then we take it over from there. Assign it to our team of trained scorekeepers, very detailed. And then when the results come back into your mailbox, we have a way to follow who's going online and seeing what they're doing. And we encourage kids to check out the film clips, check out the comments. Let's work on some of those things in practice. But also, you get a lot of parents who log on and they're able to see it. In fact, I was talking to a parent last night, Bill, I forgot to tell you, that shares their account with the grandparents who are able to see the kids play because they live in another area or another state. And the whole family is now engaged watching their son play, or daughter, but in this case, a son, on Hoopsalytics. If grandparents can use it and I can use it, most coaches will be able to access it.
Yeah, and then it's part of the process. So you film the game, you upload the film, you get your stats back. And then the next level is basically going through the game film and tagging your plays and sets. So if you have your inbounds plays, you can go in. We mark the inbounds plays for you. We don't know what your playbook is. We can say, this is play one, this is play two, this is play three. And then you can see after six or seven games, how well is play one doing versus play two versus play three. Likewise, you can also custom track different actions if you're interested in how well your dribble handoffs are doing or how well your low post entries are working. You can tag those. And then even assignment of individual players. So you can say, when Joey gets the ball inside, it's worth 1.2 points. But when Aiden gets it, it's worth 0.9. So maybe Aiden shouldn't be getting the post entries and Joey should. And again, everything is customizable. So you can track stuff that nobody's ever thought of before if you want. It's all really just up to the limit of your imagination.
What is one of the most unique things that you've seen people come up with in terms of tracking something maybe novel or different?
Well, I've seen Mike was tracking Draymond flexes with his team.
Yeah, a couple of our kids, you know, they get a little exuberant after a made three or a power rebound or a putback with the foul. And then we're getting the Draymond threes.
How does that equate to winning is the question.
Absolutely. We have fun with it. And our film sessions are a lot more concise. As we all know, the kids' attention spans are not going to be there if you're pulling up film and trying to drag and find things. Because our system is all video linked and time stamped, it's just one clip after another. Film sessions are way more efficient and they're way more productive because the kids get to see things. You don't have to show every single defensive rebound, but if you show two or three, they get the idea that, hey, we're boxing out on this one, we're not boxing out on this one. And look what happens when we do or don't. We use it quite a bit in film session, and it really helps us, no doubt about it.
And actually, to your original question, one of the studies that I did for our team was tracking inside-out passes versus perimeter passes and how it affects three-point shots. Because the conventional wisdom is that kickouts score better than threes. And it turns out for our group, they did score better than threes. And then there's a Y aspect to it, too. One of the other things you can track with shots is how contested they are. So when I'm tracking, I'll do defend within 2 feet, 4 feet, 6 feet, or wide open. And so it turns out most of the reason that these inside-out shots are working better is because you're getting more uncontested looks on the shots. Now, so especially on offensive rebounds where everybody comes in and you kick out and somebody's wide, wide open. So that's an example. We tracked from shooters left, shooters right, and inside outs. And yeah, it backed up the conventional wisdom, but it's always nice to.
And another one of our pro teams, they had a thing where they wanted to track small advantage turning into a big advantage. So their idea was to track every single time that the ball touched the paint, whether on the dribble or the pass, and then what happened after that, whether it was an uncontested or a contested three, long two, whatever the result was. Paint touches is a really great indicator of how your offense can perform with or without the paint touch.
So I've been curious about that and talked to many people, especially in the analytics fields, about paint touches and how we define that. Because to me, it's always been a representation not of a physical or a geography area. It's more of the idea of drawing two defenders towards a drive or towards an action. So I'm just curious, from your perspective, how do you judge what a paint touch is?
I think it's subjective on how you do it. You could track draws help as a different kind of a custom action. So that could be something that's not even a paint touch, right? I think, to your point, I think paint touch probably usually draws help, but not always.
So. Yeah, and then you can also track on the dribble and on the pass, and where on the pass. Does the paint touch occur? Does the catch occur on the low post or in the high post? Those are things that, you know, there's a kid who played on the game in the game last night who is not very good at the high post with the ball, even on the catch on the paint touch, but he's deadly down low. His coach is now able to say, hey, team, let's get the ball to Oscar only in this area. This is where he operates better. With the other team I mentioned, they would track paint touches on the dribble. That's all they really wanted to know, if their point guard was drawing defense and kicking the ball and what the results of that were. And so they could then relay that to their team and say, look, if we get into the paint on the dribble in transition and kick it out, we're scoring at a much better clip than we would be if we were in our set offense, for example.
It's, I love all this. The one thing, I mean, you mentioned, Bill, already evaluating sets and actions. And I can say 30 years ago when I did my master's with a college program, that was one of the things that I tracked very rudimentary, was what actually led to the quality shot. It's like we can say we run chin action, but what part of chin actually led to it? And I love that aspect of being able to dive down. It's actually not the initial back screen. It's this part, blah, 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 whatever. So talk to us a little bit more about evaluating sets and actions, particularly around this concept of, obviously, if you measure it, players will be more willing to focus on it.
Yeah, I mean, there's two different sorts of coaches. There's some that run a lot of set plays, and they'll call all the plays from the bench, and the kids will run through them and do what they do. And then there's other coaches that are more conceptual. I think that you and I fall in that camp where it's, okay, so run dribble handoffs or a spin action or a split action low post, and let's track that. So again, some coaches are going to just want to track their sets and play one, play two, play three, how did it go? Especially on baseline out of bounds plays, because those are more structured. Other coaches are going to be, let's just track our pistol action or our zoom action, see how that's going. Maybe particular players are better in zoom or pistol or spin or whatever.
But Before you go with that, Mike, I mean, I'm also curious, because a lot of coaches run a lot of false actions, a lot of masking actions too. And it's like, how do you evaluate the value of that versus just going direct to the action that Bill was just talking about? And that's a fascinating part. I know I get in those debates with a lot of coaches at high levels all the time about being very direct or masking it.
You know, we could spend the rest of the podcast on that, because there is so much action away from the ball, and whether or not that, you know, impacts the play has always been, you know, a topic of discussion in my mind, because I see some teams that even against a zone, they're running all kinds of action and they're moving from side to side. And here's the zone just sitting tight, not doing anything. My opinion on that is you don't want to wear yourself out too much with actions away from the ball that are not going to impact the play. My philosophy is just get right after it. We don't do a lot of off-ball stuff, because I also coach at the Frosch level. So my guys aren't quite as advanced intellectually about the game as the upper levels. So we don't do that. But we do play against teams that have some stuff that do that. It doesn't impact us, because we play a lot of matchup zone, 1-1-3 matchup zone. Teams at that level aren't really ready for that. But I see what you say. I like watching teams that do that. St. John's is a good example. They run a lot of stuff away from the ball, and they've got guys chasing on the other side of the floor, and it has zero impact on what's going on in a wing pick and roll. But it does occupy the defense, and there is value there. It would be fun to track what the points per possession were on activity away from the ball.
Yeah, I mean, for example, an interesting study would be, does it make a difference if you're screening away versus doing an exchange? And again, it may be team dependent, but coaches always have these questions. Is this effective, or is this more effective? And you can, you know, create that action, track and measure it, and see for yourself if it's what has the best outcome for your team.
I love the questions. That's the fun part about all this. And great to have you on here to pontificate some of these answers. Lineup analysis. I know this is another big one for coaches. And I'm curious, what methodologies do you employ to analyze lineup data and, I guess, identify optimal player combinations?
Yeah, I mean, we know which five players are on the floor basically every second of the game. So we can measure, again, the points per possession is actually probably the best metric to measure, both offensively and defensively, and then the net offense minus defense, so you can find your best two-way lineups. There may be situations like end of quarter or end of game where you need to lock down defensively, so you can figure out, okay, which five are my best defensive lineup and make those proper substitution patterns. Yeah, I mean, it's nothing like super magical. It's just we take all the play-by-play data that we generate, and we know which five were on the floor at any particular time and what the outcome was, and just give you that information so you can make a better decision as a coach.
One part of it that is magical, though, is with Hoopsalytics, you can focus just on, for example, your best five defensive lineup in the fourth quarter or the last 5 minutes of a game or the first quarter. Who's ready at the jump to get out? And of course, you're going to be starting usually the same guys, so you probably have a lot of the same data, but who knows? After about 6, 7, 8 games, you may be playing with your rotation, playing with your starters, and being able to isolate on a particular part of the game, yeah, generally the fourth quarter, generally the end of the game, to see who your best players are is a tool that I use, and I know that a lot of other coaches that I work with and talk to also use that one.
Yeah, or another way to apply it is you've got a star player on the team. Which other four players work best with that particular star player that you have?
Makes sense. And the other part is obviously, how does it influence shot selection? You mentioned already contested versus uncontested. You'd mentioned the inside out versus perimeter shot tracking. So how are we using this information to be able to help our players understand the quality shots that we want them to get?
Yeah, Mike has done a lot of work with shot quality with his team, so I'll let him tackle that one.
Like I said earlier, the kids are pretty sharp these days about receiving analytical feedback and applying it. So it doesn't always carry over to the game, unfortunately, but in practice, when we're in our scrimmaging or we're just working on particular sequences, if someone hoists up a three with 20 seconds left in the shot clock that's contested, we'll blow the whistle and I'll ask one of the players, what was the shot quality on that shot? And 2, 3, 2.5. And then the kids slowly but surely start understanding that shot quality is huge. And if you are able to make that extra pass to go from a 3 or a 4 shot quality to a 6 or a 7, the analytics show that the quality of the shot impacts the percentages. If you can just figure out a way to get that into the players' heads early in the season, then it bears fruit as the season goes along in the games.
Yeah, and with our platform, you can basically assign a shot quality value to every shot from 0 to 10. So 10s are basically bunny layups and 0s are things that would never go in. And then you can show the players after the game and say, okay, here are your quality 2 shots, here are quality 8 shots. And you can show the quality 2 shots are going at maybe 10% and the quality 8s are at 90%. And it also can make an average too, so you can see which players are taking the best shots and making the best decisions. So.
And the points off of each shot, too.
Yeah. And a lot is subjective. I know Synergy and ShotQuality.com have something where they basically aggregate. So we'll say for every single college player, when they shoot this corner three, it goes in it, whatever. And that's somewhat valuable. But on a team-by-team basis, there's some kids where you want taking those shots and some where you don't. So I think having something subjective, the same shot by 2 different kids, one could be an 8 and one could be a 2. So just being able to assign those values and say, hey, you shouldn't be taking the shots, and you should. And then just being able to back it up with the points per shot on each kid too. A kid might think they're taking an 8 when they're really taking a 2, but you can show them that with the data.
It paints a picture for you and me and all coaches that even with this quantitative data, it depends. It depends on the team. It depends on the situation. It depends on the player. It depends on a lot of other factors that goes with it, doesn't it?
Yeah, and another illustration that we have is our interactive shot chart. So you can isolate on one area of the floor for either an individual or your team, and you can see how your team is shooting corner threes. And then you can extrapolate that over a number of games and say, hey, guys, in the right corner, for whatever reason, we're shooting 42%, and from the left corner, it's 28%. So let's continue shooting threes from the right corner for now, and then let's work on this left corner and get that average up in practice. But until further notice, let's try to get the ball to the right corner. Then you can also isolate on just the paint touches. As in the paint and what your percentages are in the paint. And then also just click on see videos and see all the videos of just those shots from the paint, makes, misses, and fouled. The interactive shot charts, we use that a lot individually and for our team.
Yeah, we have one player who's 0 for 12 from the corners on threes and like 12 for 23 everywhere else. And of course, you can look at the video and find out why. Like weird stuff comes out from that.
Does he believe it?
got the video behind it, right? So with the interactive shot charts, you can easily watch the video and you'll say, oh yeah, I'm missing those. And maybe it's a technique thing or psychological or
footwork, different things like that in different spots. Great stuff.
The other way we can use interactive shot charts too is there's always the discussion about what kind of defense you're going to play. Are you going to play no middle? Are you going to play force left? Or are you going to play force middle, right? And so with some of my high school teams, we would mark off all the middle shots and then exclude the middle shots and see what the percentages were for opponents. And it turns out, which you can imagine, that when the kids are shooting outside of the lane lines, the balls go in at a lower rate. And you can also say, okay, show me everything outside of, say, 8 feet, right? And part of that is just the geometry of the shot, where shots are more likely to bounce in if you're shooting straight on than at an angle. And also some of it's just what kids are practicing. Like our team, we've gone to more force left. We've actually tracked that. So we'll track when a player drives left versus and a player drives right. And we measure that against like no middle concepts. And it turns out for this particular league, it's a wash. Force left and no middle. For youth teams, it may be different, but you can track that stuff and see what works best for your level of play and the teams you play against and that sort of thing.
So I'm curious with both, like you both mentioned this in some context. So let's dive a little bit deeper in terms of this concept of connecting these analytics to player development and progress tracking. Because to me, that's a fascinating area that probably hasn't been developed as much as it should be. This idea of, okay, in what ways do you utilize tracking data and player development analytics to monitor individual skill progression and identify areas that they've actually improved? Because I think one of the keys to motivation for players is to show them that their work in practice, their work on their own and player-led workouts is leading to them playing better basketball in games.
Yeah, I mean, through the course of the season, you can basically pick your last five games, for example, and look at shooting percentages from them versus, say, your first five games. And also just tracking different shot types. Like for me, I'm not a big fan of the runners or the floaters. Some kids practice them a lot, and some kids can hit them. Most of them can't because they're difficult shots because you're not stationary and you're moving and there's all this kind of stuff going on. And part of the player development stuff is also what you talk about a lot in your podcast, is making good decisions, right? And maybe shooting that runner, even though you practice it a bunch, is not a good decision. No matter how much you practice it, you're not going to be like De'Aaron Fox. There's like the skill development, but there's also like the cognitive development too. It's just learning to make good decisions while you're out there, you know, above and beyond just being able to make those difficult off-balance shots.
Yeah, and I would add that we also track when we shoot the ball. So when you're in your possession, if we're in transition and we shoot the ball within 5 seconds, we have data on what our percentages are within 5 seconds, within 10 seconds, within 15 seconds, all the way till 5 seconds or less on the shot clock. So after a couple of games, when you start getting the data on that, then you can relay that to the players and say, hey, look, we don't want to just move the ball up in transition because it sounds good. We want to do it because that's really where we are most effective in scoring the basketball. Those kind of things really translate to players. It's not something that's just totally conceptual. It's really fact-based. And kids nowadays really, you know, they've got so much information that it's hard to say something without them going, coach, if you have the facts to back it up, then all of a sudden everything that you say, shot quality, time of possession, time of shot during the possession, what's our percentages on our defensive press? I think that resonates. I know for me as a player, I would have loved to have had that information.
Yeah, no doubt. And another thing I'm curious about is knowing these analytics and working with something like Hoopsalytics, how is it driving your in-game decision-making as a coach, such as substitutions, timeouts, offensive, defensive adjustments, et cetera? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'll give an example. In the USA, the NFHS has implemented a rule change where you now shoot free throws on the fifth foul in a quarter. And so one of the metrics you can do with our system is basically show who's the most foul prone per 32 minutes, right? So when you're getting near that bonus time, you probably don't want to have your more foul prone people in there because you're going to be giving up those two free throws. That's an example of how to help you in game.
And then you mentioned earlier, Chris, about the chin play. We run that. It's my favorite play. I love it, especially for the high school level. We'll track it, and we know that what our percentages are on that play. When it's crunch time, we know we're going to run chin because we have the actions down. And over the course of the season, we've become so fluent in it that slowly but surely our points per possession have been rising. So we know that the analytics really supports the decision there to stick with a particular play.
Yeah, and another example is we had this out of bounds play that was basically a high elevator screen lob. And I really liked the play. It was like super simple. But we looked at who was, how the effectiveness was depending on who was in. And when one girl was in, it wasn't really effective at all. And when some of the other girls were in, it was really effective. And it turns out when this one girl was in, she was shooting the long three and she was like 0-for-7. And the other girls were like, I don't know, 3-for-4 and 2-for-5. So just being able to know who's making this particular set or action work better really helps you with play calling and lineups and that sort of thing.
You guys have been doing this for a while, so I'd love for you to share some more kind of analytic insights that you've derived over time of doing this. And I think one of the things you mentioned is the value of a three-point miss. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, I mean, you ask most people, how much is a three-point miss worth? And they'll say zero, but it's not, because three-point shots, the rebounds are longer, and they lead to basically putbacks or kickouts for another three-point shot. And so depending on how good your team is at rebounding, I found with my high school girls that a three-point shot was worth about 0.3 points per possession. But getting them to really believe in that and crash the boards, we probably could have raised that to 0.5 or 0.6. So just like weird stuff like that is, you can just show the kids, yeah, this is why you crash the offensive rebounds on the three-point shots, is because, and likewise, I don't care if you miss the shot, but I care if you don't take the shot. And just getting them to shoot without thinking about it or worrying about the outcome.
In rhythm, open shots really are important. But the other thing that our shot chart does that we didn't mention is you can also see where your misses, where the rebounds go off of your misses. So by knowing, that's always been a guess, where do most rebounds go off a corner three? Now you can know that for sure. And so that will help inform your team. Hey, look, we know that we want to be on the far side of the basket on these long threes because 67% of the rebounds go to that spot. So if you're already there, that's half the battle. And then if you can be informed on that, I think that really helps players succeed.
Yeah. I was just going to say,
because you said rebounding charting, and you said for me, one of them for free throw rebounds mostly go left.
Yeah, I think what happens at the lower levels, the sub-varsity levels, the kids are, when they're lining up with their body centered to the rim rather than their angle of release. What I think is happening is that when they're missing on the inside of the right-hand rim and it's bouncing off to the left. This is something when I was back coaching freshmen, we charted all the rebound misses and probably 70% of them went to the left-hand side because the kids aren't lining up their angle of release properly.
So that can drive you educating your players on a free throw, shooting a free throw, but also on obviously potentially rebounding the free throw, whether it's on offense or defense as well.
And like having that extra player on the to the left of the basket to get those long rebounds. And again, you can track where those go. And we saw that most of the long rebounds went to that the shooter's left off of the free throws.
Interesting. Another thing you said is why plus minus and even adjusted plus minus isn't always accurate.
Yeah, the substitution pattern we do a lot in our high school team is an offense-defense situation. We've got one player who's a lockdown defender, and his plus minus was not great, but his net points per possession was really good. And we drilled down a little deeper, and it turns out that he had, I don't know, 60 defensive possessions and 45 offensive possessions. Right. So your plus minus is going to be skewed because when you're on defense, you're not adding any plus. Right. And when you're on, so he's, you know, the numbers were just not accurate for him. It depends on how the coaches substitute, but if you're doing a lot of offense defense substituting, then plus minus is not really a great indicator of how effective a particular player is.
And then
he's not getting as many offensive possessions.
Go ahead. Sorry, Mike. Say it again.
Oh, no, I was just saying it just makes sense because you're not getting as many offensive possessions.
It absolutely makes sense. And another one is all turnovers are not the same. Talk to us about the difference in live ball turnovers versus dead ball turnovers.
Yeah, so that's one of the things that we track automatically. I mean, a dead ball turnover basically leads into a set offense for the most part, and live ball turnovers lead into transition. So if you're charting turnovers or even just coming up with the kind of scheme you want for the press, you want to get those live ball turnovers because you're usually creating an advantage on a live ball turnover versus dead ball turnover. The defense goes back and gets set. And one of the game summary stats that we provide you is we show you how many live ball turnovers for each team and what the points per possession were on the live ball versus the dead ball turnovers.
And another thing you said is obviously Kyle Smith, Nerdball, and all that. You talked about that you can make your own reports. And the other part that I think you connect for this is that you use it, you both use this for practice as well as games, right?
Yeah, you can stat your practices. I mean, we won't stat your practices for you because often there's no jerseys and that sort of thing. So you would do that manually yourself. But yeah, on the game side, I think you had Kyle Smith on one of your podcasts previously. And his thing is he basically takes certain stats and assigns a value to them. It could be a plus or a minus or whatever. For example, when I do this, I call a turnover minus 1.5. Figure that's because you're losing an offensive possession and you're giving the other team one. But like a lost tie-up, for example, is really half a turnover, right? The lost jump ball. So that we rated it as negative 0.75. And this, you can just basically take all the things that you find important, come up with an aggregate score for each player. And then the players want to compete. They get a leaderboard and you can see, okay, here are these, who's the top one, who's the second one. They can see why they're more highly rated or less highly rated. Coaches love floor dives, for example. So you can assign positive values to floor dives or hustle plays or any of that stuff. And it's all, you can come up with your own rating system. And it's usually pretty accurate as to, you know, who your best players are or what you're looking for.
Floor dives, I just want to get into that. Because again, as coaches, those are so important. To act like you're working hard, blah, blah, blah. But have you found there's a correlation between getting on the floor for loose ball and getting high value points per possession or losing them? Because some coaches now believe that when you go on the floor, you're actually more likely to lose the possession than win the possession.
I haven't tracked that in particular, but I mean, it makes sense. I mean, even just from an energy and attitude standpoint, it's one of those intangible things. I think that the kids that go to the floor more, you will probably see that their defensive points per possession score is better because they're just hustling, right? It's that grit factor.
Yeah, I know that Coach Bennett over at St. Mary's College here in the Bay Area over in Moraga, one of his players came to speak at a clinic that I was running this past summer, and hustle plays and their score, as Bill mentioned, was a competitive thing amongst the team. And he had just graduated. He's in the pro circuit right now. His number was in his mind all the time when we talked about what week to week, how you're trying to advance your individual number. The kids, if you present it to the kids in a competitive way, they embrace it. And floor dives, deflections, taking the charge, all the dirty work that most kids generally don't do or don't like to do gets rewarded and helps get playing time, when that's always a very motivating factor.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we alluded to earlier, if you measure it, they will do it, right? So if you're measuring floor dives and assigning high value to it, you're going to get more of that kind of result out of your players.
Yeah, we do that in practice too. We track all the makes and misses, and we call it out. And I think Bill and I talked about this a while ago. Pearson's law is that when you start tracking something, the numbers go up. We make a point of, even when we begin our shooting warm-up, we do our mic and drills and reverse mic-ins and one-step, two-step, call it out. How many did you make? How many did you miss? Sometimes we do push-ups on the misses. But we're embracing math all the time during practice, and that definitely correlates to the games.
Yeah, and it also correlates to life skills too. I mean, there's math everywhere, right? And just kids get the idea that math is important. It's succeeding in basketball. They'll probably figure out that's important. It's succeeding in life too.
So your team's math scores have all gone up because they value it more, right?
We'll have to track the math teachers at our high schools love us.
Yeah,
that's great. Bill, let's start with you maybe. Since you started Hoopsalytics and diving deep into the data, what is something that's changed in your coaching? So something that maybe you thought before and now because of the data and your deep dive into this, you don't do anymore, or you've removed, or you've changed?
I think it's just being more aware of your team's capabilities. And just the way I look at analytics, it's like having an unbiased assistant coach kind of tapping you on the shoulder and saying, hey, coach, look at this, look at that. My last year's varsity team that I coached, I thought we didn't have anybody that could shoot. And I was like, oh boy, we're doomed. And then a few games into this, looked at the data and saw that when these girls were shooting uncontested threes, they were making them at 35%. I was like, holy crow. And without the analytics, I never would have known. And from that point on, I'm like, okay, uncontested, shoot the ball. And we were much more successful because I had that level of insight that I wouldn't have had otherwise without the analytics nudging me to go take a harder look at some of my assumptions.
Yeah. And for me, I think it would be just eliminating the long two. We have drilled it into our kids' minds so much that one of the first plays of a game, our top shooter took a shot, made it, and all the kids in the room while we were watching it, bad shot, terrible shot. Why? Because he had his foot on the three-point line, and so it only counted as two. Effective field goal percentage, even if we're shooting 30% from the three-point line, that's essentially 45% from the field. So we talk about that and make sure that we're not shooting that long two. And our shot charts have gotten better and better, where we're pretty much a three and key type of team now. And our results are obvious. I mean, we could see that from outside the paint in the long two and inside the 3-point line, our percentages are bad. And so we've been slowly but surely eliminating that. And that really informs me as a coach, because I'm constantly on my guys saying, let's get to the rim, or let's pass up a contested long two and make the extra two pass or two to get that open three.
Yeah, and if the kids don't necessarily always believe the coach, you can go back and actually show them. It's like, okay, here's your percentages, and you can watch the video and you can see why we don't want you guys taking long twos, as an example. Our shot charts also have a distance filter too. So you can basically say, okay, show me all the two-point shots and then show me everything outside of 15 feet. And then it'll show the percentages for each player and the team. And some kids can make those shots. If you're making them at 50%, go for it. But most of them, you just want to discourage that.
And especially in a team film session where you're calling that out, nobody likes to be embarrassed. But yet, truth hurts sometimes. And you say, look, this is not a good shot for you. Don't take this shot anymore. I'd rather you take a step back and shoot the three. This way we can get some points value perhaps on the long rebound and putbacks, but also on effective field goals. The shot charts are a big help in illuminating the players to the statistics.
Guys, a fascinating conversation. I love diving deeper with analytics and all the different things, and grateful for your support of the basketball podcast. And so many coaches get access to the podcast in part because of your support. So we super appreciate that. And where can coaches find more information on Hoopsalytics?
Yeah, the best place is go to our website, which is hoopsalytics.com. And you can, we've got some demo teams you can explore right now. We're tracking St. John's this year. So we've got, I don't know, 17, 20 games, and we'll do the whole season so you can see what a real full season's worth of data is. We also have some previous history. We've got some great interactive tour and demo videos, and you can sign up for free and just upload your own games. And again, we try to make it affordable for everybody, for teams of all levels. And it's just, it's the powerful stuff that pro and D1 teams use that's now available for everybody. And yes, we're not trying to become millionaires at this, but we passionately believe in it, and it's super cool, and we love all the coaches that we meet. And yeah, so I encourage everyone to go check it out.
Yeah, and we've just gotten such positive feedback from the coaches who listen to your podcast, Chris, and they come to us and they've heard about us on the podcast, and they're informed, they're motivated. It's so much fun for Bill and I to talk to coaches who want to improve their teams and are open to the analytics, and it's a really cool thing.
It's great stuff, and I super appreciate you taking some time and sharing it a little bit deeper with us as well. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you for your support, too.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the show, and to give the Basketball Podcast and this week's guest a shout-out on social media to show your support for us sharing the game. And to stay up to date on all things Basketball Immersion, subscribe to our newsletter at basketballimmersion.com/newsletter.